It's a quirky little holiday, and we're going to be talking about Groundhog Day and the life of the rodent behind it. On a Friday, it's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Groundhog Day has ties to Germany, where hedgehogs were first used as the season-predicting mammals. And according to groundhog.org, where you can watch a live feed of Groundhog Day, by the way, hedgehogs aren't native to the U.S., so another hibernating animal was chosen instead. Enter the groundhog. What are your questions about the history of Groundhog Day? Do you have any Groundhog Day lore to share? What do you make of animals predicting weather? We're at 800-642-1234 or email your groundhog sentiment our way at ideas@wpr.org. Jenny Diliberti Shea is Public Relations Coordinator for the Milwaukee County Zoo. Jenny, welcome to the Ideas Network. Oh, are you there, Jenny?
I am.
Hi there. Welcome.
Hi.
Happy Groundhog Day a little early. So the zoo has a new groundhog. His name is Gordy. Can you tell us about Gordy?
Sure. Actually, Gordy came to us last May. So he is just going to be about 10 months old for the predicting day, which is on Saturday. But he was actually... He came to us from a USDA approved breeder in Indiana because these animals, obviously, we don't take them from the wild anymore. So he was actually bred for educational purposes, and that's why he comes to us, and we are super, super excited for him to make his debut on Saturday.
What kind of training did Gordy go through to prepare for his first ever public weather forecast event?
Well, when he came to us, he was only about 4 to 6 weeks old. So the keepers were able to work with him. They actually put him on a harness similar to a dog harness when he got old enough, to obviously have that around him. But what they were trying to do is kind of get him used to people, to having things going on around him, not to, train him for any purposes other than to be an educational animal for our kids that come for talks and things like that. So they would train him with food. They're still doing that as well. He's very food motivated. So he was easy to train, and he's continuing his training, throughout these days as well. And he'll do that throughout his lifetime at the zoo.
What kind of food does Gordy like?
Well, actually, he eats a diet of different greens, so he likes lettuce. He also likes a diet of some fruit, too, so he'll eat apples, pears, and then he likes his vegetables, too, carrots, fresh broccoli, green beans, and then he does get a diet of some rodent chow, which gives him all the nutrients and vitamins that he needs, too. But he really likes his broccoli and his carrots because I've seen him go after those really, like, nonstop, so... He's a good eater.
Do trainers see progress as they work with a groundhog like Gordy?
They do, and I think it's more or less they, don't see kind of the bad habits forming. Our other groundhogs that we had here were a little more aggressive just because that's their normal kind of physiology, and when they came to us, they were a little bit older, so they kind of had formed some of their habits. But Gordy, some of his keepers say that he is just a joy to work with. He's kind of goofy. He likes being around the keepers, so I think that they're very excited about, trying to kind of mold that sort of personality that he has because he's just very, very tame and friendly. So that's why, the keepers are really excited about having him here with us.
And so Gordy is hand-raised. He came from Indiana, you said?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these facilities that are raising these types of animals, we can't, you said that you can't get them from the wild and they come from a facility. Is this quite common for zoo animals?
It can be common. Our other groundhogs that we received, we would get them from a rehabilitation center, and we tried to go that route first. Our former groundhog Winter was a rehabilitated animal. So she was found orphaned on the side of the road. So then a rehabilitation center found her, rehabilitated her. So that's always kind of the first route that we go. Because there weren't any animals like that readily available in our, you know, sort of Midwest area, we did go to a facility that is all USDA approved, and they don't just, you know, breed the animals haphazardly. They would breed them for a need, and you know, with Gordy, there was a need for our zoo to have an educational animal, and we wanted, you know, one for Groundhog Day as well. So that's the route that we chose.
We're talking with Jenny Diliberti Shea. She is Public Relations Coordinator for the Milwaukee County Zoo, talking about Groundhog Day and the life that groundhogs lead. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about groundhogs? What about the history of Groundhog Day and customs that you like, traditions you have? What do you make of animals predicting weather? We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Jenny, tell us about the event tomorrow at the zoo.
Well, at 10:30, we're going to gather in our family farm area, and I wanted to mention, too, it is Family Free Day at the zoo, so all visitors receive free admission into the zoo. The parking fee does remain in effect, but we invite everybody to come on out. It's supposed to be a nice day. And in the family farm area, we have a special sort of, it's sort of a little prop area for Gordy, and he's going to come out from a little miniature barn area, and our zoo director is going to be our master of ceremonies. So he is going to, you know, give the signal to let Gordy out of his burrow, and then Gordy will make his prediction, and then the zoo director will deem if it's going to be that Gordy did see a shadow or didn't see a shadow, and then what the weather prediction, you know, for the next 6 weeks of our winter will be. So it should be great fun, and we invite everybody out to come join us.
After what we've been through with this polar vortex, I'm hoping that there's more than a 50-50 chance here.
Right? I know. We're counting and Gordy.
Tell us, what else will zoo visitors be able to do tomorrow? What are some of the other events?
Sure. Well, when they come on out, we encourage the kids, actually, they can still go on our website, milwaukeezoo.org, and they can download a little coloring sheet of Gordy as he makes his prediction, and then they can be entered into a raffle to win some great prizes, like some groundhog slippers, a headband, things like that. And then we're also going to have a raffle for people to guess Gordy's weight, because, like we say, he's about 10 months old, so people can take a look at him, see if he's, you know, getting on his little, maybe a little bit of, you know, winter fat to keep him warm, if he's a little chubby or not. But so there's going to be all these, you know, different activities. And then, like I say, the visitors can actually tour the rest of the zoo as they would like to, because it's open until 4:30, and they can see some of our other animals, too. And with the weather warm-up, I think a lot of them are going to be outside and getting some nice fresh air. So that's wonderful.
What's the average lifespan of a groundhog?
Well, actually, in the wild, they live anywhere from actually like 3 to 5 years in the wild. But in a zoo setting like Gordy will be, they can actually live up until 12 years old, because obviously in a zoo setting, they're getting some, you know, extra care that they wouldn't get in the wild, some, you know, better diets, things like that. So we hope that Gordy's going to be around with us anywhere, usually between 9 and 12 years old. So he has a good long life with us.
We're talking with Jenny Diliberti Shea. She is Public Relations Coordinator for the Milwaukee County Zoo, talking about Groundhog Day and the life of a groundhog. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of animals predicting the weather? Do you have any good Groundhog Day lore to share? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more groundhogs in a minute on the Ideas Network. Sun Prairie, Wisconsin has fully embraced its inner groundhog. We're talking about the meaning of the day and the life of the groundhog on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Groundhog Day tradition in Sun Prairie dates back to 1948, when Wisconsin celebrated its centennial year. And so Sun Prairie will hold its ceremony shortly after sunrise tomorrow at 7. And the official prognostication will be posted on the Sun Prairie Facebook page. But chances are there will be news cameras all over the country trained on a groundhog somewhere.
Lots of sunshine, you can see a shadow, and you know what that means.
Six more weeks of winter.
I predict that winter is over!
And you can imagine the frenzy over Punxsutawney Phil in Pennsylvania has reached a fever pitch right by now. We're just hours away from the big reveal. Do you have a fun tradition on Groundhog Day? Have you made a pilgrimage to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania? Maybe your Wisconsin community has a little tradition to share. We're at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jenny Diliberti Shea stays with us. She is public relations coordinator for the Milwaukee County Zoo. Let's get a little bit more into the life and temperament of groundhogs. They're known to be naturally aggressive, you say, but we saw that here in Wisconsin a few years ago where Jimmy the groundhog bit the mayor's ear during the Groundhog Day festivities in Sun Prairie. So what is the temperament of groundhogs?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, typically they are more on the aggressive side. We've had several other groundhogs at our zoo, actually three other ones, Wanda, Walnut, and Winter, and they were all, you know, mostly on the aggressive side. But if you look at that, too, we received those groundhogs when they were a little bit older. So with Gordy, again, they're trying to train him early that he won't be as aggressive. You don't want to take that whole wildness out of them because that's their kind of natural sort of personality. But as a whole, right now he's showing some really good sort of, you know, more tame, I guess you could say, personality traits. So that's why the keepers are really excited to continue to work with him. And perhaps he'll also be able to be in some of our keeper talks in the summertime that the kids can actually maybe touch him. At this point, they can't touch him, but they can see him up close because, again, there's no fear of him at this point, you know, doing any sort of chewing or biting or anything like that.
Groundhogs are also called woodchucks. So why the name variations?
Well, I think it's, you know, similar to other things where you have caribou that can also be known as reindeer. I think it's, you know, from the olden days or whatever that the name, you know, has evolved. They're also called, in addition to woodchucks and groundhogs, they're also called whistle pigs because they actually make a call similar to a whistle that the keepers can hear, obviously, but they're known as whistle pigs as well, but not to be confused with a hedgehog. So they can be known as, like you say, either a groundhog or a woodchuck. It's the same animal.
What's the difference between them and a hedgehog then?
You know what? That's a good question. Probably a better question.
Oh, we're getting into the weeds here. Let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Dan joining us from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Well, my favorite thing to do, of course, on Groundhog Day is watch the movie Groundhog Day.
Of course. What a great tradition. I love it. What do you love about the movie, Dan?
Well, there's one part where he's sitting with the groundhog in a truck and goes over the side, and it resets itself.
Dan, thank you so much for calling in. I mean, we would be remiss, Jenny, not to mention the movie.
Right? It's funny at the zoo because I've been at the zoo for about 20 years, and so I've done 20 Groundhog Days at the zoo, but it's really funny because my coworkers that I work closely with, we say the same thing. We're like, is it Groundhog Day again? It's like, oh my God, here we go again. Didn't we just do this? It just, it is reminiscent of the movie. It's like, here we go again, the 21st year, we're going to do this, you know, but it is, it's great fun. And the thing is, it's like, we look forward to it each year. Last year, because we didn't have a groundhog in the collection, again, because it takes some time to find the right groundhog or go to a rehabilitation center, we had our polar bear step in, Snow Lily, and she took the spotlight for the day, and so she made a prediction. And then the keeper this year of Snow Lily, she contacted me and said, "You know, is Gordy taking over for this year, or do you still want Snow Lily?" And we're like, "We can use Gordy," but she said that Snow Lily is happy to step in anytime that we need her.
I love it. I love it. So when you look at Gordy, and I know there's going to be a contest to find out. Figure out how much Gordy weighs, but how big is Gordy generally, and what color is he?
Sure. Well, Gordy, I mean, you could probably, the way he looks right now, he looks like kind of a chubby house cat, I guess you could say, when you look at him in terms of size. So he's not that large, and he's got sort of a brownish, white kind of speckly. If you look up close at him, it's almost like, I don't want to say striped, but it's more of a speckly kind of brown and white coloring, similar to a squirrel. He is part of the squirrel family. So you see that sort of resemblance in him in terms of his fur. But that fur, you know, the outside fur is a waterproof layer of fur, so that keeps him nice and dry. And then he has another layer of fur closer to his body, and that keeps the temperature inside of him. And true groundhogs who are outside in the wild, their temperature would drop during hibernation from 99 degrees to 40 degrees. So you can see why he needs those two layers of fur to keep him comfortable. Now, he doesn't go through a normal hibernation, Gordy doesn't, because he lives in a building with heat. And, you know, he's, as you can say, a captive animal. So he doesn't go through his true hibernation, but that fur keeps him nice and warm, you know, even if he were out in the elements.
Can you see his teeth all the time, or...
Yeah, I mean, when he has his little broccoli, or they'll give him treats for his training, they'll give him some peanuts, and what he likes to do is he'll take those peanuts, he'll pick them up in his two little hands. He has actually four claws on his front paws, five claws on his back paws, which allows him to climb. And he'll take the piece of broccoli and he'll hold it up and he'll chew it. And as you say, you can see those teeth just making their way through the broccoli. And boy, they work fast because he likes his treats and he'll, you know, gobble them up pretty quickly.
Which is probably why they're considered pests, since they destroy any people's gardens and crops in the wild.
Right, probably not so favorable in that way, but you can tell, you know, he actually, because they do have, you know, an area at the zoo, a little exhibit area, and he has a box, and he's put all of his straw and hay in there, and he's made his nest, his burrow in there, and then other parts of his exhibit, he has his little bathroom area, he has his area where he eats. So, I mean, he is doing the same types of things that he would do in the wild, which we like to keep that, you know, very true to his natural habitat. So it's really something to see. Now, the visitors can't see that because it's behind the scenes, but if they would come in for these talks in the summertime, the keepers would talk all about that, and it's really interesting.
Sounds like he's made a very comfortable life for himself.
Yes, and the keepers say, too, sometimes instead of going inside his box to lay in the hay, they'll find him on top of his box, laying on his back, and he's asleep because he's going through kind of his semi-hibernation, but they think that he's keeping one ear open because he likes, you know, the keepers are working in that building. There's all different kinds of animals in their separate stalls in this building, and, you know, they say, they think that he's just, you know, keeping an eye on them because he likes the interaction. So, like you say, it's a wonderful life for him at the zoo. We're excited.
Does he climb on things, or does he just stay low to the ground?
Actually, he does both, but they are very good climbers. So in his area, he can climb a bit. bit because they want to keep that natural instinct. But there is like a piece of plexiglass, if you can think of it as sort of like some fencing with small holes. So he can't climb up to the top, and he does have a false ceiling in his exhibit area because our former groundhog, Winter, was such a good climber that she climbed up her little fenced-in area, got up into the ceiling. Oh. And then our keepers and curators had to rescue her. So they're very good climbers, very good swimmers.
Oh, the things so you again, find out behind the scenes of a zoo.
Yes, right? Interesting stories. It's like it happens. A lot happens at the zoo that people don't know about. But, of course, the keepers were able to get her. But then, you know, that's how we learn. We learn,
right.
You know what, that exhibit needs a false ceiling so we don't lose a groundhog again.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Jenny Diliberti-Shea is Public Relations Coordinator for the Milwaukee County Zoo. Coming up after the news update, why do we entrust a small woodland creature with the task of predicting the weather in the first place? Why are men in top hats involved? We look at the weird history, the weird custom that is Groundhog Day. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Punxsutawney Phil and groundhogs around the country will predict whether there will be six more weeks of winter tomorrow. We're talking about the origins of Groundhog Day on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Groundhog Day occurs on February 2nd each year, which is roughly the halfway point of the astronomical season of winter. What questions do you have about how this holiday originated? Do you celebrate it in some way? Do you have thoughts or questions about Candlemas, the Pennsylvania Dutch, or animals predicting the weather? Call in at 800-642-1234 or tweet us your groundhog quips at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in Linda Lienau. She is Director of Instructional Design at the Wharton School and a part-time lecturer in folklore at the University of Pennsylvania. Linda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us the origin of Groundhog Day. What's the origin story?
Oh, so this is actually really fascinating. And like how you get to how we celebrate Groundhog Day today in the United States with a groundhog on February 2nd from where it came from is a little bit complicated. So bear with me. There are a couple of stops that we have to make. There's the tradition, as you noted earlier, is connected to Candlemas. And Candlemas is a Christian, a Catholic Christian holiday celebrated on February 2nd. And Candlemas is part of what we might think of the Cult of Saints, although it's actually a day that celebrates the Virgin Mary. It also has a connection to an older pre-Christian holiday that takes place about the same time that traditionally has been celebrated on February 1st. And as pre-Christians across Europe were being converted to Christianity, there was a conflation between pagan holidays and Christian holidays, and so we see the conjoining of the February 1st holiday and the February 2nd holiday. So that's one stop in there.
How did the groundhog eventually get involved?
That's a really great question. So the groundhog has been involved. Well, the groundhog got involved here in the United States because in Europe, as I believe your previous guest was talking about, groundhogs don't exist in Europe. In Europe, the animal weather prognosticator were other animals, other hibernating animals, like sometimes bears or badgers, other kinds of animals. So the groundhog really came into play here in the United States. Both the pre-Christian holiday and the Christian holiday had some weather prognosticating aspects to it. And both of these holidays were connected to trying to either celebrate the return of light and warmth and by extension, the return essentially of the harvest season, which is a big part of the reason for why we try to divine the weather, why we try to see how much winter is going to be left, because that tells us things like what kind of food supplies will we have, what kind, when should we start planting, how can we make sure that we have enough food to take us through to the next season.
Historically, did our ancestors think animals had that gift, had that power to predict?
So in Europe, they did, yes, which is actually really kind of fascinating. We have a lot of evidence in some rhymes that tell us about a bear who can predict the weather, if the bear emerges from his hibernation and sees his shadow or is able to see over the mountain, that winter will continue for another 4 weeks or another 6 weeks. There are some variations in this tradition. But that if it is a bad day and he doesn't see anything, then the weather, the rest of the winter will be mild.
So there's a bear, there are hedgehogs in England, there's groundhogs here. How much did the Pennsylvania Dutch have to do with Groundhog Day becoming an American custom?
They actually have everything to do with Groundhog Day becoming an American custom. So the very first reference to Groundhog Day that we have, the very, very, very first reference, actually comes from a diary in 1840. Where that day is specifically referred to it, the groundhog. If he comes out of his winter quarters and he sees his shadow, then there'll be 40 more days of winter. And so this is from the diary of James Morris, and he was a resident in Pennsylvania Dutch community, and. So that's the very first reference. But that didn't actually become a holiday until much later in the 19th century. And that's where we see the emergence of Punxsutawney Phil and the Groundhog Day tradition there. That started in 1886, which was the very first celebration of Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And we really have this journalist named Clymer Frias to thank for it. He was the city editor of the local paper, the Punxsutawney Spirit, and he was really a major factor in helping to shape and promote Groundhog Day as a tradition. He promoted Punxsutawney as the weather capital of the world and the home of the groundhog. He's the one who actually chose the location, which is known as Gobbler's Knob, where the annual festivities take place. He helped to promote and come up with some additional groundhog celebrating events throughout the year. So in addition to the February 2nd festivities, there's also a groundhog hunt and a groundhog feast, which take place in September, a little bit earlier in the year. So yes, they do also eat the groundhog.
Little did he know he was a marketing genius.
Oh, I think he might have had an idea there.
We're talking with Linda Lee. She's Director of Instructional Design at the Wharton School and a part-time lecturer in folklore at the University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about the origins of Groundhog Day, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the lore? What do you want to know about? What about the customs? Join in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to the phones now with John joining us from Boaz. Hi, John.
Hi. I know how the tradition happened a long time ago. They rolled the stone away from the tomb, and Jesus came out, looked down, and he saw his shadow, and there's going to be 6 more weeks of winter.
Well, John, thank you for that. Linda, your thoughts there.
So a couple of things. We certainly see how certain stories get reused in different sorts of contexts. And in the study of folklore, we often refer to this as multiple existence and variation, where we see traditions being retold and reperformed in different contexts for different purposes. So this might be an example of multiple existence and variation in terms of thinking about the significance of Jesus's emergence from the tomb and what happened at that point in time. But certainly, when we think about the role that the figure of Jesus Christ plays in this, he does actually play a role in it. The February 2nd holiday, Candlemas, has a couple of different associations with it. One of them being it takes place 40 days after the birth of Jesus Christ. And so this is connected to the Jewish tradition of a woman being purified after the birth of a child. And it's also believed to be when Jesus was presented in the temple. So here we see this idea of ritual purification and renewal, and also the act of presentation. And both of these ideas are ones that come up in Groundhog Day and beliefs around Groundhog Day. So we see purification and renewal, more renewal than purification in terms of the renewal of life and the return of light and warmth in spring. But if you think about what actually happens with the Groundhog Day festivals and places where there's a big production of it, like in Punxsutawney and perhaps tomorrow with the new groundhog, that there's this presentation element. So we see both aspects of that tradition coming into play there.
Fascinating, Linda, how all of these age-old ceremonial and Christian traditions, they all build upon each other and so interconnected, weaving into something that is on so many calendars, Groundhog Day, and it is so modern. It's amazing how that all weaves together.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we see a similar sort of a thing when we look at how the pre-Christian traditions were also celebrated. So the pre-Christian Romans in a nightly procession on February 2nd carried torches and candles to honor the goddess Februa. This is where we get the name February. And part of the reason for that was to honor her and hopefully through doing that, gain some favor with her son, Mars.
Mm.
Again, the month of March is named after. And so we see a similar thing happening with the Christian festival as is happening with the pre-Christian festival. And so you can sort of see really easily how there's been some conflation of traditions there.
We're learning the origin story and how this quirky holiday came to be with Linda Lee. She's Director of Instructional Design at the Wharton School and a part-time lecturer in folklore at the University of Pennsylvania. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your Groundhog Day traditions, your questions, predictions. They're welcome, too. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is the Groundhog Day edition of Wisconsin Weekend as we learn all about how this tradition came to be and we acquaint ourselves with this rodent. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Spoiler alert, according to the Weather Channel, the weather tomorrow can influence if Punxsutawney Phil and legions of groundhogs across the country will see their shadow or not. They say groundhog predictions are not very accurate. Nevertheless, we're learning why February 2nd is special, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like about this quirky holiday? What do you think about animals making predictions? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Linda Lee stays with us. She is Director of Instructional Design at the Wharton School and a part-time lecturer in folklore at the University of Pennsylvania. And Linda, I have to say that Punxsutawney Phil and Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, really, really takes this seriously.
Yes, they do.
I mean, when I went to the official website, groundhog.org, you know, they've started a nonprofit apparently for this, but, you know, why are there men in top hats, and what about the dress around Groundhog Day?
So I do not have a good explanation for the top hats and the dress. I really wish that I did. What I can tell you is that it is when we see different kinds of rituals often include special ceremonial dress. And so here you can think about the special attire that people have when they get married, for instance. Wedding dresses are a very specific type of clothing. We see that same kind of thing. We see the day marked by special clothing and special other kind of attributes, especially among the ritual experts of the Groundhog Day festival. But why specifically top hats? I do not have an explanation for that.
Was there any kind of practical purpose for Groundhog Day, or would you classify it as more of a superstition?
Well, it's definitely a superstition. Superstitions are articulations of folk belief that usually include either a verbal component or a customary component or some kind of material component. So think about, like, find a penny, pick it up, and all the day you'll have good luck. There's the verbal component of that. There's also the customary component of picking something up and through that action having, hopefully, having some good luck as a result of that. So the traditions around Groundhog Day are in the same kind of vein as other superstitions, in that they'll have a combination of verbal traditions and customary traditions and material traditions.
Is Groundhog Day celebrated anywhere outside the U.S.?
So not by calling it Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. That might be celebrated. It's possible it's celebrated in Canada, but I don't know the answer to that. And again, part of that is because we have groundhogs here, and there are other animals elsewhere. But when we talked a few minutes ago about animals, weather prognosticating animals from Europe, we talked about bears and we talked about badgers. Like groundhogs, those animals are also hibernating animals. And so the fact that they're hibernating animals who are coming out, that is a big reason why they're endowed with the ability to predict weather, or believed to have, rather, the ability to predict what the weather is going to be, whether the rest of the winter will be mild or whether it will continue for a long time. It's kind of interesting when we think about the amount of time that hibernating animals tend to hibernate. And it's not uncommon for hibernating animals to wake up in the middle of their hibernating season. And so my understanding is that again, part of the reason why groundhogs are chosen, why groundhogs have come to play this role, is that the time at which they typically start to wake up coincides with this point in time on the calendar year.
Linda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Linda Lee is Director of Instructional Design at the Wharton School, part-time lecturer in folklore at the University of Pennsylvania. Earlier, we talked with Jenny Diliberti Shea with the Milwaukee County Zoo, where at 10:30 tomorrow morning, the zoo will introduce its new groundhog, that is Gordy. Activities take place where Gordy will venture from his burrow. And then in Sun Prairie, Groundhog Day ceremony takes place at sunrise, shortly after sunrise tomorrow at 7. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a dive into the Wisconsin song.
I recently received a question from a listener, Antoinette. She asked, why doesn't Wisconsin have a song? There isn't a single song that I hear and think, good old Wisconsin. This question got my head spinning. Is there a song that represents or unifies our state's diverse music fans? Probably not. But I decided to turn this question to some Wisconsin music journalists and hosts and find out what they thought is the Wisconsin song.
And I'm going to open my program tonight with a little number that's quite a favorite with all my friends back in my hometown, Milwaukee.
I'm Allison Geyer, staff writer for Isthmus Newspaper. My choice is the song Beer Barrel Polka. It's played all over the state at sporting events and weddings and Oktoberfest celebrations. Probably the most Wisconsin version of all is performed by Liberace. His version is a weird, charming mix of Wisconsin's most iconic cultural contributions.
I'm Tom Giffey with Volume 1 magazine in Eau Claire, and the song that comes to my mind is Wisconsin, recorded by Glenn Yarborough.
There's the town.
You may remember it as the theme to North Country Notebook, a WPR show from about 30 years ago. I can't hear it without thinking of my public radio listening father and the Wisconsin that we both knew.
And I wanted you to see the old Wisconsin that I knew.
Hi, this is Christopher Paulus. A song that makes me think of Wisconsin? It's an intertribal song. An intertribal song is played at powwows, and it's an invitation for everybody to dance. And what makes me think of Wisconsin? Powwow time and intertribal songs. This one is by The Tribe, a group made up of many Native nations from across Indian country.
Hello. I'm Justin Barney. I'm the music director at 88.9 Radio Milwaukee. I think the artist is our very own Justin Vernon, a.k.a. Boney Baker. It sounds like a cabin in up north Wisconsin. So I know that it's going to create a little bit of controversy because he's relatively new. And the song itself doesn't say Wisconsin in it or talk about the state directly. But I think Skinny Love by Bon Iver encapsulates the feeling of being in and being from Wisconsin.
And I'm told you to be patient, and I'm told you to be fine.
Opinions aside, Wisconsin actually has an official state song.
On Wisconsin, plunge right through that line.
On Wisconsin was written by Carl Beck and William Purdy in 1909.
Purdy was a musician, and he found out that the University of Minnesota was having a contest for a new football song for there. And so he wrote the song for Minnesota originally.
That's David Null, the former director of University Archives.
So instead of On Wisconsin, it would be Minnesota, Minnesota. But Beck convinced him to, instead of submitting it for the contest of Minnesota, to give it to or use it at the University of Wisconsin.
Those lyrics were heavy on the football lingo, and it's still used today at UW games to pep up the fans. But in 1959, the Wisconsin State Legislature declared On Wisconsin the official state song. This version has more, shall we say, dignified lyrics.
We, thy loyal sons and daughters, hail thee good and great.
Or people say, oh, On Wisconsin is the state song, but I expect if you ask lots of people to do the actual official lyrics of the official state version, they wouldn't get very far.
This story came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question, and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
When I'm out walking, I strut my stuff, and I'm so strung out.
It is Wisconsin Weekend on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.